This segment of the Financial Sense News Hour is brought to you by Nationwide Financial. For more information about Nationwide's products and services, please visit nationwide.com. That's nationwide.com. Neither Nationwide nor any of its affiliates is related to or affiliated with Jim Poplava of Poplava Securities, Incorporated.
This is the Financial Sense News Hour with the president of PFS Group, Jim Poplava. Since 1982, PFS Group has offered asset management and educational resources that have helped investors build, maintain, and preserve their wealth. And now, our lifetime income experts, Jim Poplava and Kathleen Harris.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jim Poplava, and welcome to this week's edition of Lifetime Income.
I'm Kathleen Harris, and this week we'll be talking about both investing and tax efficiency. If you recall, last week Jim and I talked about the retirement option of last resort, reverse mortgages. Jim's guest was Reza Jahangiri from the American Advisors Group and the senior publisher of the Reverse Review. So we talked a little bit about funding your retirement with reverse mortgages if you reach that point of difficulty in your retirement life. This week we're going to talk a little bit more on the savings that you do to prepare for retirement. We're going to be talking a little bit later in the program with Joel Mee. He's actually representative of The Standard, which is a group that specializes in customized pension and retirement plans for different types of employers. So, Jim, I'm assuming today we'll be talking about different types of retirement plans at some level and the tax benefits of how those might help out your tax situation, and then also about how to invest those retirement plans so that they work the strongest and the hardest for you.
Yeah, because when we talk about, Kathleen, planning for retirement, which is what we do here in Lifetime Income, the most important thing that you have to take into consideration, how can you do that most efficiently? And it involves two things. One has a tax component to it, and then there's an investment component. And probably the most efficient way to save for retirement is using some kind of form of pension plan, because the government allows numerous options, defined benefit, 401ks, which is what we're going to be talking about with our guest today. But what this allows, there's three reasons that you want to do this. Number one is you're going to get a tax deduction. So let's just simplify this as an illustration, and let's assume you make $10,000 a year. Most people make more than that, but just bear with me in terms of illustration. If you make $10,000 a year and you put $1,000 of your $10,000 in earnings into a 401k plan, a pension plan, profit sharing, SEP IRA, whatever the pension plan is, number one, that $1,000 is subtracted from your income on the front page of your tax return. So automatically, you're getting a tax deduction because the government is not going to tax you on that. So that's the first benefit that you get. The second benefit that you're going to get is that oftentimes in many retirement plans at companies, especially with 401k plans, your employer may match your contribution. So, Kathleen, imagine you put in $1,000 and your employer matches your $1,000 with either $1,000, $500. Automatically, you've got a 100% return on your money, or 50% return, depending on how high or how much your employer matches. So that's a second benefit. And then the third benefit is while you're making investments inside the retirement plan, any dividends, any interest you earn, any capital gains that you take, they are tax deferred and do not enter your tax picture. So obviously, if I can make income, dividends, and rates of return and not have to pay taxes on it, I'm obviously going to accumulate a lot more money than if I had to pay 25, 28, 30 plus state taxes, or 40 or 50% to the government on my investment income.
You know, Jim, I'm really glad you're talking about this, the three benefits of investing in an employer-sponsored retirement plan. You know, you and I were talking last week about research that shows that nearly half of people over 55 have saved less than $50,000 for retirement, and almost half of all Americans are not participating in their employer 401k plans. And I'm quite surprised, Jim, because I frequently get the question from existing and potential clients, should I invest in my 401k? And I'm really surprised by this because, as you pointed out, there is a great tax benefit on the upfront side to your income level. And there's tax-deferred growth, which is another thing that's of benefit. And I always remind people, if your employer's going to match, that's essentially free return. That's like guaranteed return on your money by putting it into an employer-sponsored retirement plan. So for me, I think it's a great way to go ahead and save for retirement. And I think those of you out there that do have employer-sponsored retirement plans and can afford to defer the income, it's a great way to reduce your tax load and have your investments grow for the long haul.
Oh, I agree with you. But one of the reasons we don't see people do that, I think, you know, is probably, Kathleen, immediate gratification versus delayed gratification. It's something I'm going to bring up when I interview our guest today, Joel Meade. You know, you take a look at somebody that's just out of college, okay? You worked hard, you got your college degree, you get your first job, you're on your own, you're earning this money, and you're thinking, oh, this is great. I want to buy a new car. I want to get my own apartment. Or you're married, and maybe you're starting out your family and you're thinking, boy, the first thing for us is to buy a house. You're thinking, that's immediate. That's something tangible. That's something that I can see right now. Versus, you know, if you're in your 20s or even your 30s, you're thinking, gosh, retirement, gosh, when I'm 65, that's 40 years from now. That's 30 years from now. And so there's this kind of, I think of the analogy, the devil on the one side of the shoulder and the angel on the other side. Well, substitute immediate gratification for delayed gratification. And oftentimes, in fact, in so many cases, immediate gratification often wins out because you can say, well, if I don't put that money in the 401k plan or a pension plan, SEP IRA, whatever it is, I can spend it now. I can go out and have a good time. I can buy a nicer car. Versus if I take that money aside and I put it away, out of sight, out of mind, I've now established something. So I think the real key to making this work is becoming disciplined and saying, okay, I'm going to come up with a budget. I'm going to put X amount of dollars into a retirement plan so that I never see it. And then I'll learn to live on what I have in the balance.
Jim, I'm really glad you mentioned that last point. I have this little phrase I tell people about saving for retirement or saving in general. Brainless is painless. So if you have automatic deductions taken out of your paycheck and pushed directly to your 401k, or you have your employer put part of your money directly into a savings account so it never hits your checking account, you never know it's gone. You never miss it. So if you're able to make automated contributions you don't have to think about, you just don't feel it the same way. I was also thinking, Jim, I think a lot of people don't realize exactly how much money they can put away in their 401k. If you're under certain ages, 55, you can contribute $17,500, and there's a catch-up contribution of $5,500. That's $23,000 a year you could be putting away for retirement and deducting from your taxes. If you're a high income earner, that's not a small deduction.
No, and it gets even better than that when you think of a lot of 401k plans. You'll have employers that will match you 100% up to a certain limit or 50%. And you think about that, Kathleen. How many people would like to make an investment today in the first year earn 50% or 100%, whatever the matching contribution is? So it's not only that you're putting money aside for yourself, but also your employer is contributing to it. But once again, we get into this argument, delayed gratification versus immediate gratification. And there's been studies, and I would invite our listeners to go online and take a look at these calculations. Look up a retirement savings where you could say, okay, I'm 25. What happens if I want to have $1 million when I retire? Because I hate to tell you, folks, you're going to need $1 million if you're going to retire in the future, given the low interest rates and the cost of living. But it'll tell you, if I put X amount of dollars, if I want to have $1 million, you put in your age, and let's say you're 25, 35, whatever it is, how much would I have to put aside today at age 25 or 35 versus 10 years later or 20 years later? I think you're going to be absolutely shocked when you hear the difference between those two costs, because, you know, it's the magic It's one of the seventh wonders of the world, compound interest. That's how you build great wealth. But the important thing is developing the discipline to do it now when it's out of sight and out of mind.
Jim, I just want to make one last point about 401k contributions that are employer matched at some level. If your employer came to you and said, you know what, let's just say you came to me and said, Kathleen, I'm going to give you a $6,000 bonus this year. And do you think I'm going to say, Jim, I'm going to turn that down? Absolutely give me a $6,000 bonus. If you're not contributing to your 401k and your employer's offering a match, you're essentially turning down what amounts to a tax-deferred bonus. So don't turn your employer's free bonus money down. Take it and run. Jim, let's actually switch topics a little bit and talk about, okay, so now I have this money in my retirement account, IRA, 401k, whatever it is. What should I do with that money? How should I be investing it so it's the most efficient and effective for me inside that tax-deferred structure?
You know, a lot of it, Kathleen, once again, depends on your risk tolerance, your age, how many years away you are from retirement. But, you know, if you're looking at a longer-term retirement plan, in other words, you've got either a decade or several decades or years before you retire, then, you know, you're going to be better off in something that has more growth potential in equities. And one of the problems that people have, and this is one of the first things I learned when I got in the business, is the advantage of, let's say, dollar cost averaging. And yes, we can all think of the horror stories of the tech crisis and the collapse of the internet bubble going back to the year 2000, 2002, the credit crisis between 2007 and 2009. But bear in mind, most 401k plans, about 60% of the money in 401k plans are invested in mutual funds. The other is in banks, institutions, and insurance companies. And even insurance companies with the use of annuities have mutual funds. So the bulk of the money that goes into these 401k plans or any kind of pension plan is invested in mutual funds. And the thing about it is if you have a long-term time horizon, all that matters when you get to retirement is how many shares that you own in the various assets that are in your portfolio. So if you are having money withheld from your paycheck on a weekly basis, bi-monthly basis, monthly, whatever it is, that money is buying more shares of your stock fund when the market's down than when the market's going up. And all that matters to you 10 years, 20 years, 40 years from now, whenever you retire, is how many shares of that mutual fund or how many shares of that stock do you own? And that's why you've seen study after study. I think of the book that was done. It was a study done by three professors. It was called Triumph of the Optimist. And it was a look at 16 stock markets over the last 100 years. And it was amazing. They talk about the success of long-term investing, long-term compounding, long-term reinvestment of dividends. It's astronomical in terms of the difference. So getting back to your question, Kathleen, a lot of it depends on your age, your risk tolerance. Obviously, somebody that's, let's say, 55 and is maybe 10 years away from retirement should be investing much, much different than somebody that's 25, 35, or 45, or somebody that's 65.
Jim, thinking about this whole idea of dollar cost averaging in, I want to bring up my brainless is painless phrase again. Most retirement plans are set up where you can actually just set up automatically so that every time you have a contribution into your 401k, it's divided among two or three or four different mutual funds. Now, I'm not saying this is one of those things where you just keep the contribution going behind the scenes without you really worrying about it. You still need to check in on your investment from time to time. But if you're able to just have automatic contributions to various different types of mutual funds, again, it's painless. You don't feel it. You don't have to worry about it or stress about it. It just happens in the background.
Yeah, and it's not just that you don't have to worry about it, but remember, once again, you're looking at a long-term time horizon. And I think so many times, in addition to the conflicts that we have to deal with immediate gratification versus delayed gratification, Kathleen, we're often dealing with the fears of the market. I mean, you just take a look at the crises that we've gone through in the last decade, the collapse of the tech bubble, 9/11, the Gulf War, Katrina and Rita, the credit crisis, the euro crisis, the debt ceiling crisis. I mean, we deal with crises, and the media tends to over-dramatize these crises. And so investors operate from fear and looking at the short-term perspective versus a longer-term perspective. You wouldn't think about if you bought a house, you're living in your home, and all of a sudden your neighbor got into financial trouble and they had to sell their house at a discount, would you say to yourself, oh my goodness, housing prices went down in our neighborhood, I better dump my house now. You know, people really ought to take a longer-term view, and they ought to invest appropriately for their age and understand what it is that they're investing. And I think if you add all of that and take a more disciplined, a more reasoned approach, and you have a plan, you know, the chances are you're going to be much more successful, number one, and especially the earlier that you start. And number two, if you have a plan, that you stick to that plan, maybe modify it as your needs change or as you get older or your financial circumstances change, you're more likely to be successful rather than find yourself reacting to a crisis or even worse. As the years go by, all of a sudden you wake up one day and you say, oh my, the kids are out of college. They've moved out of the house. We're empty nesters. I'm only 10 years away from retirement and I don't have much money. So I think having a plan is also important.
Jim, when people call me and talk to me about their 401k plans or their other retirement plans, one of their comments is, I have five mutual funds I can invest in or 10 mutual funds, and I have no idea what to invest in. And I think part of the problem here is just not knowing where to go to find more information about these mutual funds that you're being offered, especially when they have sort of names that don't really mean a whole lot to most people, like value growth or growth, strategic growth, or something like that. That really says nothing to your average investor. Each different mutual fund company typically reports performance on a monthly or quarterly basis, and they typically tend to publish a rough breakdown of the types of companies they're investing in and usually list their top 10 holdings. So let's say that your plan offers you Vanguard or Fidelity or BlackRock mutual funds. Go to the Fidelity's website or Vanguard's website or BlackRock's website and type in the symbol or the name of the fund you're looking for that's offered by your plan, and you should see a whole lot of information pop up about performance and holdings and all those sorts of things. So don't feel like you're blind investing in things that are offered by your retirement plan. Do a little digging, do a little research, and make the internet work for you by finding this information online.
You know, another point I'd bring up here too, Kathleen, is don't go chasing performance. A lot of times, and especially depending on what phase we are in the business cycle, we see a lot of rotation out of one sector where you'll have a 20-week period where, let's say, utility stocks are the hot things because we're in the risk-off trade. So utilities are producing high rates of return. Or you'll find a year where, I don't know, technology stocks are doing well, energy stocks are doing well, gold stocks, whatever the sector is. And what'll happen is investors, when they're looking for their rates of return, oh, that's the number one performing fund. That's the number one performing sector. Not understanding where we are in the business cycle, and what often happens is they'll chase investment performance. And Kathleen, you're on the receiving end of this because you know what the phone calls are like, especially when we've had a big surge in the price of gold or gold stocks are surging. You'll get a flood of calls. Oh, I want to get in the gold market because, you know, gold stocks are up 30 and 40%. And what they end up doing is chasing performance rather than taking a balanced approach, taking a look at risk and saying, this is who I am as an investor in terms of my risk tolerance. These are my goals. This is the kind of risk I can withstand and understand what that risk is. I wonder if you might address that because you often get these questions in the phone calls.
I really do, Jim, and I can see the temptation in that. I really can. If I'm an investor and I maybe don't know a lot about the market and I'm looking and I'm comparing, you know, 10 different mutual funds, I'm starting to get cross-eyed trying to figure out what to do. Looking at performance, especially recent performance, seems like a really easy way to pick a good investment. And this is why I think it's really good for the investor to just dig a little deeper in that information and look at the underlying holdings. What types of companies is this particular mutual fund investing in? Do those companies make sense to me? does the allocation of the mutual fund make sense to me? Because I think that you're right, Jim. I think a lot of people have that temptation to say, I'm going to pick the fund that was up 30% last year rather than the fund that was up 10% because I know the 30% one's going to do better without bothering to take a look at, like you said, the economic cycle, et cetera. So again, just really want to encourage people to take a look at the underlying investments and really see if they make sense to you before you start dropping your money down in it. Well, we've talked a lot today, Jim, about reasons to invest in your retirement plan, whether it has to do with a tax deduction, about matching employer contributions, or tax-deferred growth. We've also talked a little bit about being a little bit wiser with making sure the assets you're choosing inside that retirement plan structure work the most effectively for you. Now we're going to switch gears a little bit and move on to the interview with Joel Mee from The Standard and talk a little bit more about the structure of these types of investments and how you can participate with your existing employer. And if you missed it last week, once again, we had an interview with Reza Jahangiri from American Advisors Group about reverse mortgages. For this week, Lifetime Income Series, I'm Kathleen Harris, and I look forward to talking with you next week.
Joining me on the program today is Joel Mee. He is from The Standard Company. The Standard offers customized retirement plan solutions designed to complement services provided by advisors to meet the full scope of employer needs. Joel, before we get into the specifics of 401k programs, tell our audience about The Standard, what you guys do, and then let's get into some nitty-gritty on 401k plans.
Sure, Jim, thanks. The Standard is a insurance company based out of Portland, Oregon. We're a long-time company, been in business for about 106 years. Our primary businesses are group life and disability insurance, but we also, as you mentioned, specialize in qualified retirement plan, record keeping, and administration.
I want to talk about 401k plans. They are more prominent today. I was reading a statistic that as of September of last year, there's $3.5 trillion in assets in 401k programs, representing about 18% of the $19.4 trillion in the retirement market. Now, Joel, if we were talking 30 years ago, a lot of the big companies had something called the defined benefit plan, which a lot of government programs are still in that vein. Companies switched over to 401k programs, which put the onus to some extent on employees to contribute some of their own money into the 401k plan market. So let's talk about the genesis of the 401k plan and why they are so widely used today by most public companies and private companies.
Absolutely. When the 401k plan was first started, it was intended to be part of a three-legged stool to provide for an individual's retirement. One of those legs was, as you mentioned, the defined benefit or the pension plan that was very popular then. The second leg was Social Security. And the third leg was the 401k plan, which would allow an individual to help contribute to a successful retirement. Over the years, as those pension plans became very expensive and as companies needed to become leaner and meaner, they started to go away as companies had less money to spend. Also, as employers started to look at their fiduciary liability and responsibility in providing retirement plans, started to look at how can I shift some of that responsibility over to my employees. So companies, between shifting that fiduciary responsibility and also looking for ways to save money, that responsibility really has shifted from the employer onto the employee. It is at that employee's discretion whether they choose to contribute to that 401k plan and how to invest.
Joe, I want to come back to something you just said. The onus of responsibility of a 401k plan is really on the individual. And let's talk about the importance of that, because if a company offers a 401k plan, an employee doesn't necessarily have to contribute to the plan. And even if they do contribute, they don't have to put in the maximum. So talk about where the responsibilities lie. And it's really important that individuals understand this.
Sure, absolutely. Although we are seeing popularity of auto-enrollment, which is when somebody becomes employed, that they are automatically enrolled into the plan, that employee can still opt out. That is one option. But for most individuals, it's their option to choose to enroll in their 401k plan, to start contributing, to start having money withheld from their checks and go into this plan every month. And the statistics have shown us over the years, people do not do that naturally. They would rather have that money in their take-home pay rather than saving it. We're not good savers as a society. And what behavioral finance shows us is that when you give people that choice, they'll procrastinate, the inertia will keep them doing what they're doing, and it's a hard decision to make. And because that's the decision, and because of human nature, we're finding that people aren't saving enough or choosing not to save at all. And so that can really be a challenge to people having enough money to retire securely.
Joel, how much of this is not just procrastination, but let's say I'm a young 20-something, I just got out of college, I'm starting my first job, and probably in the 20s I'm thinking, boy, I just got out of college, I'd like to have a nice car, if I'm married, maybe I want to buy my own place someday. And, you know, looking out 40 years from now from retirement is probably the furthest thing on my mind, but one of the real secrets in magic is compounding. And so obviously starting out early in my 20s, I need to put aside less money because I have a longer period of time for that money to compound. Let's talk about that. Isn't part of this maybe what I call delayed gratification? In other words, if I'm 20-something, it's hard for me to see the benefits of something that I might not benefit from for another 40-something years.
Boy, you've hit the nail on the head. We see that all the time when we're talking to individuals, and especially young individuals, and trying to get them to enroll. But what you mentioned, the magic of compounding, that's how we need to get these young individuals to understand that it's so important that they put it in now. And you just have to put it in simple terms and think about just starting out slow. If you're in that boat and you can contribute, start out at 5, 6, 7% of your pay, that's great. But if you can just start out at 1% of pay, it's amazing what that 1% will turn into over that 40-year career. So if you think just the price of your coffee every morning, just taking that and contributing that to your 401k plan will make such a huge difference. So for those individuals where you think, gosh, it's just out there, it's just taking that step to do that 1% and then just increasing it 1% a year over the next 10, 12 years, it's amazing how that compounding will get you to a successful retirement. And I remember talking to individuals who we got enrolled in a plan in exactly that way. And after 5 years, they were shocked to see what their account balance was. Wow, that grew fast and I didn't even feel the pain. And you got to remember that in a 401k plan, that 1% hit, Uncle Sam's paying for part of that because it's coming out tax deferred, pre-tax, and so you're not paying tax on that money. So a 1% contribution is not hitting your paycheck at 1%. It's less than that because, again, part of that's coming out of the tax deferral.
Joel, have you guys ever done any studies like, let's say that, you know, I'm 20-something and I want to retire with $1 million. If I start out and I'm 25, I would have to put X amount of dollars a month or a year into a 401k plan. If I'm 35, it would be this amount of money. If 45, this amount of money. And 55, God knows what that number would be. Have you guys done anything like that that illustrates this point?
We have, and there are numerous studies and numerous calculators. It's very easy to go out onto websites and look at retirement calculators and charts that show this. It's shocking how much that number goes up from age 20 to 30 to 40 to 50, as you said. When you start at age 20, it's a very comfortable amount. It's an amount that truly is affordable, even for a very low wage earner, to get to a point where you can replace your income in retirement.
You know, the other thing, too, is many of these employers that offer 401k programs supplement the employee's contributions. So if the employee puts in a dollar, you may have an employer that puts in a matching contributions of a dollar, 50 cents. I mean, when you think about compounding and rates of return, if I'm putting in a dollar and my employer is matching me, as many do, let's say 100% of my contribution up to a certain percentage, or even 50%, think about that. Let's just take an employer that says, you know what, we're going to match anything you put in by 50%. That's a 50% rate of return. I mean, those are some incredible numbers when you have the employer kicking in money, and it's surprising that more people don't take advantage of this.
Yes, and again, Jim, it couldn't be more right. When you are fortunate enough to work for a company that also offers a matching contribution, as you're describing, it's really almost unthinkable on why you wouldn't contribute at least the amount that you need to get that match. Otherwise, you're simply leaving money on the table, and you describe it as just an additional return. That's absolutely right. It's like your employer offering you compensation and you choosing not to take it. It's just so easy to do.
When you take a look at these programs, let's get into some of the specifics, because one of the things that we always try to tell our listeners to the program, if you're saving for retirement, the thing that you want to do is do so on the most efficient way possible. And contributing to a 401k plan, or any kind of retirement plan for that matter, is one of the most efficient ways to do it, because number one, the money goes in pre-tax. So if you're in a 30% tax bracket, 30% of your contribution is supplemented, in effect, by lower taxes paid for by the government. So that's number one. Number two, in addition to saving on taxes, when you have an employer that is also matching contributions, the employee benefits in two ways. Number one, they get a tax deduction, so they save on taxes. Number two, if the employer matches contributions, the rate of returns are magnified. And number three, those investments made in the 401k plan are allowed to compound tax deferred until retirement. You just take those three and you add them together over a period of time, Joel. They can work magic for somebody's retirement.
Absolutely. There is no more efficient way to do it. I mean, the only alternatives are individual retirement accounts, of course, regular savings accounts, but they just do not have all of the advantages that you're describing, Jim. And along with just, again, back to human nature and behavioral finance, just with the ease of out of sight, out of mind. Once you go online and make that election or fill out that form and elect to contribute, you just get to where you don't miss it. So when you combine all the factors that you just described with just getting past that procrastination and just getting it to be a habit, again, you get to that day 10 years from now, 20 years from now, 30 years from now, and look at that account balance and say, wow, it grew. And wow, look at this money I've got. And it's such a great feeling of security.
Let's get into some of the particulars now of 401k plans. As I understand, the contribution limit is somewhere around $17,500. If you're over a certain age, I believe maybe it's 50 or 55, that limit can go up to $22,500. Correct me if I'm wrong on those figures, but what are the limits to a 401k plan?
No, you nailed it. It's $17,500 is the limit for 2013 for an individual. And if you are age 50 or older, you can contribute that additional $5,500. And both of those limits are indexed, so they typically have increased from year to year by about $500 or so. But those are the limits within those amounts. So that's the amount that the individual could contribute. If the employer matches or the employer makes contributions, that's on top of that.
That's important. So let's say that I'm fortunate enough, I make enough money, and I could really use the tax help, especially in states like here in California, where you reach 9.3 very quickly, even though the tax rates go up beyond that. Joe, you know, if I'm putting 17.5 or 22.5, and I have an employer that's matching that contribution by 100%, you're talking about big bucks. And you're talking about one healthy size retirement plan. And I've seen individuals that have taken advantage of this who have put the maximum amount in a 401k plan and have had matching contributions. And I'm talking about seven-figure 401k plans when they retire.
Sure. And, you know, Jim, and the reality is that, frankly, it's a little bit scary, but most of us will need a seven-figure. Even very moderate wage earners will need a seven-figure account balance in order to retire successfully, in order to maintain our income. We're living longer. So you think you get to that point of retirement, and retirement means something different to everybody. But just even if you think about the stereotypical age 65, and you think of our life expectancy, to have enough income to maintain your standard of living for the next 20 years after that, you often need a seven-figure account balance at the point of retirement. But it's very possible, and back to our earlier part of our conversation, why it's so important to start young.
You know, most 401k plans offered by companies, a good bulk, at least I read, about 60% or more of 401k plans are held in mutual funds as of the fall of last year. Other institutions such as insurance companies and banks have the remaining balance of assets. You know, one thing that we've seen in the last 12 years, Joel, and I want to address this issue, is we saw a bear market in stocks from 2000 to 2002. We saw another bear market from 2007 to 2009, where the value of stocks fell. But when you're looking at a long-term retirement plan accumulation, I want to talk about dollar cost averaging, because let's just simplify and say my employer pays me, let's say, every 2 weeks. So every 2 weeks, I'm putting money into my 401k plan. Now, let's just take a real bad period of the last 12 years where we had two big bear markets. During the downturn of those bear markets, when the value of stocks are going down, my bi-monthly contributions that are going into my 401k plan, they are invested in mutual funds whose value has dropped. So I'm buying those shares at a cheaper price. And if I do that consistently over a period of time, let's say during the two-year downturn between 2000 and 2002, I bought a lot of shares at a lower price. In fact, at the bottom of the market, the S&P was down 40%. Likewise, in March of 2009. So if I continue to fund my retirement plan every 2 weeks, every week, or once a month, depending how often I get paid by my employer, those contributions are buying shares at lower prices. And when the market comes back, as it has done since 2009, where it's up over 130%, think of the value of those shares that I bought at the market bottom, what they're worth. So let's talk about being consistent when you're looking at a long-term plan and realizing that even in a market downturn, the idea is to own as many shares as you possibly can by the time you retire. And it's during those downturns that you get to buy more shares and accumulate more shares, which will have value when you retire. Talk about that.
Yeah, and another incredible advantage, and you described it perfectly, and right along with that is back to that behavioral finance and that human nature of the money just keeps coming out and being invested. And so for those individuals, I kind of call it a set it and forget it philosophy. If you've got that money coming out and investing, and right during those downturn, you are definitely buying more shares. And the other thing is that for those individuals that are unemotional about how they invest, which my humble opinion is how all investors should be, is unemotional about how they invest, is they're not looking at that downturn. They're not looking at their statement or going online and looking at their balance and moving their money to cash or to a cash equivalent, but staying invested and continuing to contribute to those bond and equity funds, buying more shares when the market's down, and then as the market has come back, go their balance. So it's unfortunate. We do see those individuals that see the market go down and immediately want to sell out of their bond and equity funds, and it's disappointing to see because, again, these 401ks are long-term investments, you know, as we've been talking about, over several years, and so you just really have to ride it. Doesn't mean that you shouldn't pay attention, and when I say set it and forget it, you should take advantage of providers' ability to rebalance your account periodically, but it really is just back to being unemotional. And again, one of the advantages, as we've been talking about, of the 401k plan is it just happens automatically as part of your payroll deduction every payday, and it just happens.
Let's talk about one other advantage that 401k plans offer, depending on how the employer set them up, is we all know that throughout life, sometimes emergencies come up, unexpected expenses. It could be medical, it could be education, it could be, you know, maybe loss of a job. And some plans allow the employees to borrow from the plan. They have to pay the money back. They pay it with interest. Joel, address some of the borrowing provisions that some 401k plans offer employees.
Absolutely. A good majority of the plans actually do allow for loans. And so a participant can take a loan and usually doesn't have to provide a reason. It depends on how the plan is designed. at that employee's discretion, they can take a loan. Now, we strongly urge, when we have any participants in any of our plans interested in taking a loan, we strongly urge them to seek some tax advice because it's a very individual decision based on facts and circumstances. Taking a loan from your 401k plan can be one of the most expensive ways to access money. So it's really important to get some good advice from a financial expert about what other options you might have. Taking that loan, you're in essence paying it back with after-tax dollars, and it really can be a very expensive way to find the funds that you need to do that. But that being said, having loans in 401k plans is an advantage because you never know what's going to happen in life. You never know what kind of emergency you're going to have. So to be able to have access to those funds is actually an advantage in a 401k plan. You just need to be very careful as an individual before you access funds that way. In addition to loans, many plans have provisions for what are called hardship withdrawals. And most of the time, those do need to be taken for a specific reason: to prevent eviction, to pay medical expenses, to pay post-secondary education expenses. And again, that's a very expensive way to get money out of your plan, especially if you're under 59 and a half. But it's good that that's there because, again, you know, emergencies happen in life, and to not have access to those funds would, you know, make the plans not as attractive.
Joel, as we sum up here, if you were speaking to a group of, let's say, young individuals who just started work for an employer that has a 401k plan, or an individual that has been working for a company that has a 401k plan and has not contributed, what would you tell them? What would you do to motivate them to start now?
I would say think about what that 1% pay would do. Just start slow and ramp it up every year. Take advantage of the tools that your employer provides to you. Every 401k provider has excellent tools and resources on their website. Happen to think ours are some of the best, but every provider has great tools, calculators. You can find them out on the internet everywhere. Just take literally 10 minutes to log in and type in 401k calculator on your search engine and put in your salary and look at what it would cost you to put in 1% of pay. You'll be surprised how low that is. And if you just take the few minutes to enroll in the plan, I promise you that a year or two from now, you'll look at that account balance and you'll be surprised at how much you didn't miss that money and how much money you've accumulated. And that's an asset that you have. And as we've talked about, that's an asset that you'll have for retirement, but it's also an asset that if you need to tap into it for one of life's emergencies, it's money that you've got there to do that.
Joel, I know your company provides customized retirement plans, so if we have some listeners out there that have a company that would like to look into setting up a 401k plan for themselves and their employees, if they wanted to find out more about the services your company offers, how could they do so, please?
Absolutely. I would say check us out at our website at www.standard.com or talk to your professional financial advisor. The Standard works exclusively through financial advisors, and if you are a business owner, we know you probably work with a financial advisor. Talk to that advisor and ask about the Standard.
We've been speaking with Joel Mee. He's Pacific Northwest Regional Retirement Plan Coordinator for the Standard. Joel, I want to thank you for joining us on Lifetime Income Series. We appreciate the information. I hope you'll come back and talk to us again.
Thanks a lot, Jim. Appreciate it very much.
You can subscribe to Financial Sense NewsHour in the iTunes and BlackBerry podcast libraries or at feeds.feedburner.com/FSN. Find more information about our guests at www.financialsense.com/newshour. Friend us at www.facebook.com/financialsenseonline. For our on-the-go listeners, you can access Financial Sense on your mobile device at m.financialsense.com. The Financial Sense NewsHour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the NewsHour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of James Poplava and do not take into account listeners' suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense NewsHour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertising with Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the NewsHour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.
This segment of the Financial Sense NewsHour is brought to you by Nationwide Financial. For more information about Nationwide's products and services, please visit nationwide.com. That's nationwide.com. Neither Nationwide nor any of its affiliates is related to or affiliated with Jim Poplava of Poplava Securities, Incorporated.